The Guardian.
Football Daily from Euro 2008. How was your weekend? Better than Petr Cech's, probably. He and the Czech Republic crash out of Euro 2008 as Turkey staged the turnaround of the tournament. We review the action and look forward to Decision Day in Group B with Monday night's Austria-Germany humdinger and the Poles against the Croats. Also, we get the latest news headlines, hear your posts and test out another new phone setup. That's all in Football Daily, as packed with tasty cup action and wafer goodness as a Holy Communion. Hello, everybody. Well, in the Football Daily headquarters today, it is Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, Barry. And Barney Roney.
Hello.
Hi, Barney. And I'm very glad you're here, because it's quite a spooky atmosphere here in the Gusser Beer Clinic. The place is completely deserted. It's closed today, and it being the oldest restaurant in Vienna, built in, what, 15-something or other, and it's got a Turkish cannonball lodged in the wall from one of their many Ottoman sieges. It's quite an interesting atmosphere here, isn't it, Barry?
It is very spooky. Interestingly and surprisingly,
yes.
The owner, very hospitable owner, Herkos, who builds doors on request and gets televisions and, you know, will manufacture an ice swan sculpture if we ask him for one, I'm sure. He gave us the freedom of the pub tonight and just told us to help ourselves to the beer. And
right.
I think we've had, so far, had the grand total of half a pint each,
well,
which
indeed.
Is a pretty dismal effort, but there you go.
Now, out in the streets, they're celebrating, they being the Turks, and we're going to be hearing a little bit more about why very, very shortly. We'll also be speaking to Raphael Honigstein about the big game here in Vienna on Monday night, the Germans against the Austrians. But right now, the news is waiting, Barry. Bong.
The latest Ronaldo story is that Real and United had actually agreed the deal weeks ago, but just forgot to tell Sir Alex Ferguson about it. He'll understand, surely, and, say rumours, console himself by launching a £25 million counter-strike for Tottenham striker Dimitar Berbatov.
Bong. There have been plenty of signings at Blackburn, with almost 2,000 Rovers fans putting their name on a Facebook petition to stop Sam Allardyce being appointed manager. The club are said to be delighted. They'd no idea they had that many fans. Bong.
And while Marcello Lippi is being lined up to return to the Italy side this summer, Roberto Donadoni's squad are obsessing about a potential biscuit, their term for a friendly fix. After exiting the last Euros thanks to a Denmark-Sweden game they're sure was just a biscuit or sham, the Azzurri are now sweating that Tuesday's Holland-Romania match will hand them a similar fate, with the Dutch rolling over, rendering their own result with France irrelevant. The biscuit, you can't get it out of your head, says Daniel De Rossi. Adds Gigi Buffon, after last time, I couldn't stand to go through that again. Crumbs. Still, if they do get dunked out of the cup unfairly, they're certain to report it to UEFA.
Right, well then, Group A. One of the games of the tournament, and it certainly didn't look like it was going to be. The Czech Republic against the Turks. The Czechs all over the Turks. 15 minutes ago, Barney, they were 2-0 up. And then to Paul Doyle's horror, because he was trying to do a match report, the whole thing completely went to pieces.
I think it surprised everyone. I mean, the Turks were dreadful in the first half. And I think what happened was basically the Czechs became incredibly tired by the end. They looked really heavy-legged. They looked like the collection of slightly old chaps that they are. And the Turks just kept coming and coming. They had nothing. I mean, they looked knackered by the end, the Czechs. But it's strange that it should be Petr Cech who let Turkey back into it.
Well, he does have his slips from time to time, doesn't he, Cech? And fantastic belief from the Turks. As I say, 15 minutes ago, they were out of the tournament. And they absolutely came roaring at them. Cech certainly gave them a hand, failing to clear that ball. And Nihat, well, we were told he was going to be the rising star of the Turkish team. And lo and behold...
Oh, he was fantastic. I mean, his second goal was an absolute pearler. He was slightly fortunate in that it went in off the crossbar and could have gone anywhere, but or indeed not bounced over the line or whatever. Demirol got sent off then, so we had the amusing spectacle of Tung Chai going into goal with his jersey on inside out and looking absolutely panic-stricken that... you know, he might have to actually stay in goal for a penalty shootout if the Czechs had take or manage to muster a shot against him, but they didn't, so he wasn't called into action. It was a fantastic game, and one which I said about 10 minutes into the first half had nil-nil written all over it. So once again, I surpassed myself in the prediction stakes.
I think the Czechs were always going to be someone's fall guy in this tournament. They really missed Rosický, who's not here, and they've got no one to replace him. He's their main guy, and they could have really done with him in the second half, someone to keep the ball for them.
Well, the Turks are certainly going to miss Volkan Demirel now. How many games is he going to be out for?
Well, under Schweinsteiger rules, he'll be out for one game. Right. It's hard. I mean, well, Schweinsteiger's more of a shove. Which one was more of a,
They were very similar kind of...
Well, Demirel pushed...
Jan Koller.
Jan Koller in the chest, probably because he couldn't reach his face. But Schweinsteiger, there was contact between back of hand and face, but it was very, very minor contact, more of a half-hearted cuff than a physical assault.
Well, even if it is only one game, it's the quarter-final against Croatia.
If it's one game, that's probably the end of his tournament, because they're playing Croatia next, who I think have been, after their first game, were excellent against Germany, and I can't see the Turks getting past them.
I could if they play like they did in the second half today. They'd be a match for anyone. They were marvellous. Especially towards the end, they were just sending in cross after cross after cross.
Colin Kazim Richardson out in top as well.
Yeah, Kazim Richardson had another good contribution when he came off the bench. Sent in a couple of wayward crosses, but a few excellent ones as well. And it was Altintop who sent in the cross for Nihat's goal.
Winner, yes, indeed. Meanwhile, Portugal had a 2-0 defeat by the Swiss. Basically, Scolari dropped, 8/11 of his first team. Just Ricardo Ferreira and Pepe in the lineup against the Swiss, who probably went and won 2-0 with two goals from Hakan Yakin. There's been various bits of press about a row in the Portugal squad, and that there have been all sorts of repercussions from Scolari's, or the announcement of Scolari's move to Chelsea, and the players upset because apparently Scolari told them not to discuss their futures or let transfer talk in any way intrude on their Euro 2008 campaign. And then lo and behold, bang, he's all over the paper, not only with his move to Chelsea, but then infinite kind of ramifications of which Portugal players are going to be joining him at Stamford Bridge, etc. Is this going to have any impact, Barry? You're a well-known sports psychologist.
I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised to hear that, because I was reading an article, I think, on the Observer website this morning about what great morale there is in the Portuguese camp, and there was, you know, a description of when Scolari, forgot his name there for a second, when Scolari announced that he was off to Chelsea, he got a big round of applause, and there was a photograph there of the, you know, him getting hugged and the players applauding him.
Oh yeah, but that's just nonsense. I mean, no good can come of announcing that your manager's leaving after the first two games of a tournament. It was a disaster for Portugal.
Even though, for example, Holland know that Van Basten's leaving at the end of the tournament.
Yeah, they knew that before the tournament. Right. This is a bombshell halfway through.
Right.
And announced for Chelsea's convenience. You can bet Scolari didn't want it to happen.
Say Barney was to announce, you know, say a couple of podcasts in, that he was off to join, I don't know, Fighting Talk or whatever.
Do you think it would damage pod morale?
Hugely, hugely.
You mean pod morale in Fighting Talk or in the
Touché, Mr. Rooney. Yes, well, I'm a little bit with you know, Barney, because these tournaments are funny things. You know, the quality of players can only go so far. So much of it is luck, circumstance, and
spirit. It's a disaster for Portugal. It's the one thing that can really derail them, particularly because the bond in that group is based on this very soppy, kind of sentimental, all-for-one, pray together, stay together kind of thing. Oh, very much so. I mean,
it's a very religious squad.
Prayer sessions. I mean, Scolari carries around China figurines of religious figures. It's all very kind of, we're all in this together.
Really?
You suddenly say, oh, by the way, you know, we're all going to have a quick prayer session, then I'm going
trying
off to Chelsea for the money.
Marry that image with John Terry and various other regulars.
Well, no,
Stanford.
It's very interesting. I mean, maybe it will be the best thing that's ever happened to John Terry. He could probably do with a little iconography in his
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely.
But surely, say, for example, if James Richardson made us pray before each pod and had pictures of the Sacred Heart or, you know, whoever up on the wall, and then announced he was going to leave, surely that would be a cause for great celebration, because we've got rid of this Jesus freak, thank God.
Well, one man's Jesus freak, Barry, is, you know, etc. However, no, it's an interesting point, and well made, Barney, because, you know, it's you don't want to mess too much with the recipe when you're in a winning run, and that's what they do seem to be doing. But there you go. Portugal, anyway, losing against Switzerland, it doesn't matter, because etc., 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 and they are going to be taking on somebody from Group B, who we'll be finding out on Monday night. We're going to be looking at those games very, very shortly. First off, though, I fancy a romp through the posts. We were talking about, what are they called? Idioms. Yes, we were, Barney, with our friend Daniel yesterday, and we were saying about if my mother had three balls, etc., etc., etc. Well, we've had various contributions in from across Europe. Bibuk in Poland, popular sayer in Poland. If my grandmother had a moustache, she'd be my grandpa. And I like this one. If your father had gone to the kitchen and not bedroom, you'd be a pancake. Vienna International, if that horse was a cat, then I could ride up that tree. And if Austria could score goals, they wouldn't be number three in the world. EJD in France with ifs, you could put Paris in a bottle. How very French. Lookalikes, we invited your lookalikes. Lots coming in. I have to say that back at the start of the tournament, we looked at When Saturday Comes, his website, and they had some masterful ones. There's a great one of Leo Beinhaken and Klaus Kinski, which pretty much puts the lid on the whole lookalike thing. Absolutely brilliant. Other top lookalikes, Kobe Kuhn and John Lithgow. Ricardo Carvalho and Lord Percy, Carol Bruckner and Tony Hart, and the late, great William Hartnell, who Barry probably won't remember. Barney, do you remember William Hartnell? Very, very early Doctor Who.
No.
Okay, Andrea Pirlo, Severus Snape, Donna Doney and the Flaming Lips' Wayne Coyne. David Putty, explanation for France's infuriating yet comedic performances in this tournament can be put down to the fact that they're managed by Larry David in a bad wig. Red Giant reckons Raymond Domenech is dead ringer for Parker for the Thunderbirds. How about Philip Lam, and says Red Giant, and the Guardian's very own Sean Ingle. Do you know what? It's an interesting one, that, isn't it?
Sean Ingle and who?
Philip Lam. From, do you not see that? Okay. Dominic Sand the Eagle from the Muppets. Joachim Low, Trent Reznor. I have no idea if Trent Reznor looks like Joachim Low, but there you go. Gus hitting Carlo Ancelotti, indeed. And Wigini, about lookalikes, says Wigini. Before I watched today's Euro 2008 video clip, I thought it was about Fabio Capello and Gianluca Cavalli at karaoke. Very nice. One final post. Lee Herring, there's always a team or two that look absolutely unbeatable before collapsing in a game and going out early. See Argentina in the last World Cup. Is this the fate awaiting the Netherlands? Also, one of the top favourites for the Golden Boot comes away with zero goals. Example, Rooney in 2006. Is this the Glendinning curse about to strike Mario Gomez? Any other trends that look likely to repeat themselves?
There's the Golden Boot problem, isn't there?
Yeah.
Teams who have the Golden Boot winner never win the tournament, or only very rarely. Think of one. There aren't very many. There was Ronaldo in 2002.
Yeah, there you go.
But apart from that,
I think Mario Gomez has to take a certain amount of responsibility for his own failures in this tournament. And I think an unfair amount of the blame is being heaped on me.
You've seen the German papers, haven't you?
But I seem to be, you know, it's all my fault that he, just because I bet on him.
But what do you think? Are Holland setting them up to repeat Argentina's spectacular collapse in the World Cup?
Well, it's just they've been so good that if they do get beaten, then it will be a spectacular collapse.
But it does seem to happen.
Only one team can win the tournament, so some very good teams are going to lose between. All right,
put it another way. Is it usually a team that doesn't really impress in the early stages and thus doesn't peak too early that comes through and usually wins tournaments? Italy in 2006, Greece, they never even came close to peaking in 2004.
Greece is still waiting to impress them.
Let's move on then. Group B awaits us on Monday. And the situation is, complex. As you know, Croatia are already through. Germany are 2 points ahead of Austria and Poland. Now, Germany only need to draw with their co-host Austria and Vienna, as then Poland can't catch them on head-to-head. So Germany, they get a draw against Austria and Vienna, they go through. If Austria win against Germany, they would go through, unless Poland defeat Croatia by a bigger margin than the Austria win, and then they would overtake the Austrian superior goal difference.
One thing I've noticed that a lot of our Austrian friends don't seem to realise that Poland could still go through at their expense, even if they beat Germany. They seem to have been totally caught up in the whole beating Germany thing. So it would be quite chucklesome if they beat Germany and still didn't go through.
I'm not sure they'd be that bothered. I mean, this country is obsessed with playing Germany. It's not even that they particularly really want to beat Germany. They're just so thrilled to be playing them and for it to be such a huge game.
You don't... Well, the other day when we were out in the streets, that was very much the message. Like, yeah, qualifying would be nice, but beating Germany, that's what it's all about. And, Barney, you've been researching this. You've been to hear the managers, have you not?
That's true. I went to the press conference this evening, and I thought that Löw seemed really quite tense, actually. He's very much a kind of a management speak kind of manager, and he talked a lot about new goals and moving forward. But he seemed tense. He certainly seemed a lot less relaxed than Higgisberger, who was a riot. I mean, he was great
he?
Fun. Yeah.
What did he do?
I think his opening kind of line was, "We're not wetting our pants about playing Germany."
Oof.
Whereas, by contrast, the Austrian striker Martin Harnik said that the pressure is on Germany. They will be shitting in their pants.
Yeah, did he say that?
Higgisberger was not happy about that. He said that was a rash remark, and I wished he'd said it after the game rather than before.
Hmm. Well, indeed. One man who may have a view on all of this is our very own Rafael Honigstein. Rafa, you just come out of this incredible Turkish game. How was that for you?
It was quite unbelievable. I mean, I just don't understand how the Czechs could collapse. Tomas Zalucci, the captain, said, you know, a team like us, with our quality, it just shouldn't happen to us. He was very, very disappointed, and obviously Czech, mostly to blame for that terrible slip-up before the equaliser, but even he said, while it was at that stage, it was still 2-2, there was no reason to lose, but it all went pear-shaped.
It certainly did, or quite the opposite for the Turks, who were busy celebrating here in the streets of Vienna, and a remarkable turnaround from them. All these upsets, Rafa, are you beginning to get worried about Monday?
I've been worried since Thursday about Monday, not just after this game. I think some of the German players, not to put too fine a point of it, will be absolutely terrified, because, you know, this is a lose-lose situation. If we win or get a point, yeah, that's to be expected against Austria. But if we lose, then these guys will be immortal and we'll be the biggest laughing stock ever. So it's a terrible, I think there's a psychological pressure on the players. It's going to be intense. And, Michael Ballack today went out and said, yeah, we're going to work on that and try to sort of get the mentality right, and I think it's going to be a real key factor, because it's going to be a very nervy encounter, I'm sure.
On the plus side, you've got Podolski back, definitely, yes?
Yes, we've got him back as a second striker. I think it didn't really work on the left. Yes, he played well. The problem is he's tactically so ill-disciplined that he makes poor Janssen look like an absolute nightmare. And Janssen, I mean, had a bit of a stinker, to be fair, but he's not nearly as bad as Podolski made him look. But he's out as well, he's injured. So a few changes. I think we're going to see a more defensive Germany in many respects, more organised hopefully as well.
Mm, okay, they're all mentioning Cordoba, of course, in the 1978 World Cup, etc., etc., and so on. But what about these noises coming out of the German camp? Miroslav Klose, for example, talking about a bad feeling and people being selfish there, and it's not a nice place to play football and that. Is there a serious rift between the German players?
I don't think there's a rift. I think there has been, there was a team meeting, very harsh words were spoken. It was very loud, and Claude Gus came in for a lot of criticism, because there was a feeling that he doesn't move enough, doesn't pull his weight, lacks presence. And the problem with him is, he's a sort of skillful striker, doesn't really rely on his force, but when it doesn't work, it's almost as if you play with one man down, and you just can't afford to do that in such a crunch game. So he was criticized for that as well. But I wouldn't call it a rift. I would just call it a very frank discussion. And usually, after these sorts of situations, you usually see a good reaction from players.
Mm. Okay, well, you only need the draw, Rafa. So let's not get too concerned about things, though. I mean, the odds are that you are going to be continuing in the tournament. It would be quite an upset if you weren't.
Yeah, thanks, James. Not sure. I'm more confident now after you summed it up. I think the problem is, if it is a draw for, let's say, 85 minutes, I think the Germans are going to be so nervous. And, of course, we've got this stereotype, the Germans, efficient, organised, da-da-da. But, I think after the Croatia game, where Germany part at stages, you can say that, the confidence perhaps isn't there. Unless we settle the nerves very quickly, I think it's going to be a really, really difficult game.
Barney, you were saying that Hickensberg is expecting the Germans to come out looking to score very early on to put the game to bed, yes?
Well, that's what he said at the press conference. He said he knows the German mentality very well, and he believes that Germany will come out and try and score as quickly as possible and try and finish the game. And he said Austria are ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, they tried that against Poland, and it worked well. They tried it against Croatia, and it didn't work at all. And I can understand, you know, the Austrians expecting to do exactly the same. But the problem is, in many ways, I think that it's going to be a more defensive lineup, certainly midfield. And I'm not sure Germany have players to go all out blazing, because they very much rely on a collective movement. And when it works, it's very forceful, it's very direct, it's very useful. But when it doesn't, unfortunately, there are huge gaps. And I don't think you can allow yourself to be that open. And I think Hickersberg has perhaps started the mind games already, because I can't see Germany really adopting such a gung-ho approach in the early minutes.
Can I just remind you, it is Austria we're talking about here.
I know, and that's the problem, because, you know, everybody else has been going into games saying, well, this is Austria. And you saw that they nearly got a good result against Croatia. They should have won against Poland, perhaps, but again, couldn't score until the final minute with a penalty. And they nearly killed us when we played them a few months ago, where at half-time it hit the bar, it had great shots on goal. Lehmann had an absolute nightmare. It's difficult, because on one hand, you'll say, well, they're playing at home, they're the host, you know, they're going to do very tough. But I think there's something in footballers where, you know, 100 times, but they still don't believe it in a way, and still think this is Austria. And then as soon as they're on the pitch and start tabbering them with crosses, all of a sudden you have a game at hand. And you've seen in the first two games that teams find it very difficult to deal with that sort of rudimentary approach.
My word, Rafa. I'm hoping you're going to get some sleep tonight, because you're sounding a little bit strung out over this one.
I'm sleeping tonight. I just hope I sleep tomorrow night.
We'll speak to you soon. Fingers crossed, eh?
Thank you.
It's a fair point about Austria that Rafa makes, and interesting to see Howard Webb today saying that he did make a mistake in the Poland-Austria game, but it wasn't the penalty that he gave to Austria in the in stoppage time. It was actually the fact that he allowed the Polish goal, which was offside.
That will further endear him to his Polish friends. There'll be another death warrant issued. I mean, he's right. He's dead right. It was a penalty, and the goal was offside. So, you know, fair is fair.
Well, there you go, Austria, eh? And Barty, you're half Austrian yourself.
That's right. I'm probably the only journalist covering this tournament whose grandmother was once an all-Austria ice dancing champion.
I don't know, there was that chat we were speaking to the other day.
there's loads of us. There's loads of us around.
My word. Well, congratulations to her. Thanks very much.
It doesn't particularly run in the genes.
No. But the football apparently does. And, you know, there you go. They're going to have their centre-back, Sebastian Prodl, out suspended. But, Barney, shock me. What do you think is going to happen Monday night?
Well, I think Germany will win. Let's not forget that Austria basically not a very good team and wouldn't be anywhere near this tournament if they weren't the hosts.
Well, this is true, but then in the games we've seen, they have performed pretty well. They look very competitive. They have had problems putting the ball into the net. But our friend Daniel, who was here last night, was pointing out that a lot of that had been to do with the fact they've been playing goalkeepers like Boritz, who was absolutely outstanding. And possibly Lehmann isn't going to be of quite the same calibre.
I don't think Austria's problem is they've come up against a string of excellent goalkeepers. I think they're just not a particularly good team who haven't won at home for 8 matches now.
Oh,
and I think the reason Germany will win is I think Germany tend to struggle against very technically skilled teams like Croatia, who keep the ball from them. Whereas Austria play a rudimentary physical style, which will suit Germany down to the ground. I mean, they can do that times 20.
Sounds convincing when you put it like that. So, is it worth us talking about Poland-Croatia? If Germany are going to win, that means the Germans go through, the Poles can't do anything about it.
Well, I think Germany will win, and I think Croatia will win as well, because I saw them play against Germany, and they were excellent. And in that game, they discovered a formation which worked for them, now that they don't have Eduardo around. I mean, Bilic very bravely rejigged his team, playing Krankjær just off the front, with a Rakitic coming in on the left. And they suddenly discovered a new attacking pattern, which was great. And I really think they could do very well in this tournament.
Is he going to jig that side around again, given that they're already qualified? I mean, he said that he's not going to field any first-choice players who are on a yellow card who might have minor knocks or bruises or anything. However, he does point out that this doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to roll over. And he reminds us of when they played England at Wembley when they were already qualified for the Euros.
He does mention that game occasionally. But no, I don't think he will rejig his team, because I think he was really happy with how that worked. And I think he'll want them to play well again.
So tell me again, how does it work? You've got Krančar up there at the front with...
Krančar was playing as a second striker.
Yeah.
off Olic, who does a lot of running, and Crenshaw doesn't do much running at all.
Right.
But they basically had three, with Modric and Rakitic, three very nice twinkle-toed ball players just behind Olic.
Right.
And it made a lovely attacking formation that Germany just couldn't cope with.
How are they at the back, the Croatians?
They're not bad. They've got a couple of very good fullbacks. I mean, right. Bilic said that Čurluka, he thought, was the best defender in the world after that game, which is...
Yeah, he looked good, didn't he?
I mean, yeah, best defender in the world might be a bit much, and Prancic on the other side is very good.
They've got Graham Paul's old chum, Josip Simenic is this one the centre-halves, and who's this?
Kovac.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty solid in there, actually. I think their only problem is they don't have an excellent centre-forward who can sniff them out a goal.
Mm. All right, no, I just like, you've got to like a team that can defend because there's so few of them around in this tournament.
Sorry, James, if I just go back to Germany-Austria. You were talking there like a man who thought Austria had a pretty decent chance, do you?
Well, I get caught up in the emotion of it all.
Yeah.
But then Barney kind of shoots
me
down and stuff.
Rooney,
the pragmatist.
And plus, I remember the fact that Otto Kringer, is it? The local brewery? Which apparently is not one of the more celebrated local breweries, but anyway, it has promised any Austria player who scores in the group games a lifetime supply of their beer, which Vlasic presumably has already claimed thanks to his last minute penalty against Poland. If only they could pass through the Germans in quite the same way that your Otto Kringer will pass through you.
We've got a lifetime supply of beer at our disposable. Their disposal tonight, and we're making very heavy weather of it, so they'll probably be all right.
I'm sure they will. Barney, you were about to say something slightly more relevant.
I was just going to say on the subject of Cordoba, which everyone seems to be talking about here,
yes.
I spoke to someone called Hansi Müller, who was in the German team, who played at Cordoba, as did Hickersberger, and he made two interesting points, that at that time Austria had a very good team, which they don't have now. And he made another point that the problem with the German team was that they were bickering and arguing with each other and falling out. And, I mean, Rafa says that sometimes that brings the best out of you, but it certainly didn't then. And there's an odd parallel with what's happened in the last couple of days as well, which he kind of, Müller himself sort of noted.
Very interesting. Well, we're going to find out very, very soon what's going to happen in this extraordinary Group B finale. Who would have thought it? Germany at the mercy of Austria, and Austria possibly with the chances of going through to a quarter final. And we're going to be, I think, down there with the good people at the WUK by the Volksopera in a kind of, it's a kind of alternative meeting place.
Gonzo pod.
Exactly. Another Gonzo pod awaits. My word. In the meantime, that pretty much wraps it up for today. In fact, it certainly does wrap it up for today. So many, many thanks to producer Pete for his fine work. Barry, outstanding as ever.
Thank you.
Barney, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are you going to be at the game?
I'll be there. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be very exciting.
Woof. And me, thanks to me. And you, the listeners, as ever. God bless you for joining in. And thanks very much for your post. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.